Dzień dobry Państwu. Dziękujemy za przyjście na dzisiejszy wykład i debatę. Ja chciałbym na początku powiedzieć, jak wygląda plan. Chcemy zrobić to w postaci dwóch krótkich wypowiedzi naszego gościa, Saski van Stein, i nasze ze strony zespołu mapy architektury. Chciałbym najpierw przywitać wszystkich gości. Później na końcu zrobimy taką dyskusję. Mam nadzieję, że Państwo weźmiecie udział w tej dyskusji. Więc chciałbym przede wszystkim... I would like to switch to English right now. I would like to welcome our guest today, Saskia van Stein. She's the curator and artistic director of Bureau Europa and NIE, the Dutch Architectural Institute in Maastricht. She was previously working for the NIE in Rotterdam. She was curating several exhibitions, including the shows with the Stealth Unlimited on the Venice Biennale and the last edition exhibition on the vacant NL. This was the last, am I right? One after that, okay. And she was also curating the exhibition in the Canadian Art Center on the conflict zones called the good case. She is interested in the public and social role of the architecture. A part of Saskia, we are in the team of three authors of Map of Architecture: Gosia Kuciewicz, the architect from the Centrala group, and I would like also invite Michał Szota, who is the programmer and the co-author of the interactive version of the map, which is available on the internet. So I think we will start with your lecture, your keynote. So please.
I was asked to present our work in about 20 minutes, so that you know what we are up for. It's my aim to address the current state of affairs in terms of both the architecture production, on the one hand, if you like, mapping the profession, which is not very happening, but we'll get to that in a moment. On the other hand, I also would like, in consequence of that, share some thoughts on how one could react to this crisis, if you like, as a cultural institute, because I'm sitting in front of you as a cultural producer, I'm also not trained as an architect. So I think much more about maybe an anthropology of architecture than architecture per se, or like to understand architecture in a sort of societal force field of urgencies. And as such, I've prepared three lines of narrative that I will share. And after that, we'll open the discussion and we'll maybe look at the European perspective a little bit more. There's two parts of reading out and three parts of images, so bear with me for the reading out. The increasing vacancy rate of approximately 20% in the Netherlands is not limited to office spaces, but also includes cultural heritage, industrial zones, churches, business areas, inner city shopping streets, parts of inner city and urban nature, in fact. Cuts in government spending, lack of political will has led to a withdrawal in the spatial organization of the Netherlands. A sparse investment of market parties and conflicting regulations make it increasingly difficult to redevelop in a profitable manner. Now, I'm not sure if you're all architects, because this sort of might be happening here as well. We've been walking around and have sort of the same idea. But, of course, the Dutch had a very strong planning instrument, and which we were known for a whole decade, and it's literally shifting at this point from a welfare state model to a neoliberal utopia. The political belief in the involvement of the private sector and the market-oriented of the 90s made it possible to gentrify with a solely top-down planning structure. This enabled a situation built on value systems which had ground exploitation, long-term projection, short-term profit, endless growth, and generic consumerism at its core. This way of working has become problematic and obsolete in the Dutch context. It's necessary to re-evaluate our modus operandi both within the profession but also within society as large. This calls for a new vocabulary, a new way of working, a new way of thinking, maybe even a new sense of realism on what the role of the architect is, but we'll get to that in a minute. In the Dutch context, it results that we can really mainly operate within the urban fabric. Some even say, a famous architect or historian says, Holland is full. We have to start working with the inhabitants and with the notion of time. So, as promised, I'll show you some of the projects that we've been working on. For the biennial in 2010, I worked with Rietveld Landscape, and we somehow wanted to address an urgent topic in the context of the Venice Biennial. Now, at that time, populism was raising its roaring head in the Netherlands, the PVV, in fact still growing, was sending out the message that Holland is full. Now, the projections actually for 2013 would be 21 million, we're only 17, and we're shrinking. So we wanted to play with that in the Dutch context, and we wanted to combine that with the idea of the vacancy rate. At that time it was 17%, we're now up to 20-21%, and it's rising. Of course, we'll get to that mechanism in a little bit. This is the Rietveld Pavilion in the Giardini in Venice. For those of you who don't know the Biennale, it's a biannual exhibition space altering art and architecture. It was mainly initiated as the idea of celebrating the nation state and innovation and showing other countries at the beginning of the last century what we were up to. This building, we calculated, has been empty for 39 years because it's only programmed for 3 months a year, which was, of course, a huge present. This was the invitation for our exhibition. Then the exhibition itself. Obviously, I mentioned already that we wanted to reference the fact that the Netherlands is not full because it's empty. So the whole building was empty. Only we had this floating ceiling of a office in reference to a office floating ceiling in reference of maybe the Nolli map, the map of public domain Rome. And then also I was very much afraid of if people would actually walk up the stairs, because in my field it's always said that you cannot have people take staircases because they will never do it. In fact, this museum has a lot of staircases. But that being said, so this is a very serene look, very abstract. Again, the floating, and then perfect. Thank you. That's helpful. And then on entering, so you move up. Then on entering, you saw 7,000. Models, basically, varying of the typological differences that I already mentioned, churches. And it was obviously overwhelming. And with that, we made a map. And we mapped, in fact, where these buildings were, what the potential function could be, because there's a whole economy going into these buildings, because we call them monuments. But they're just standing there half of the time. They're tightened in regulation. And this atlas of vacancy had a provocative function. This is the inner city of Amsterdam. The black dots, oh, it's a bit blurry, but the black dots give you an impression where the vacant buildings are. They're huge. We photographed them. We made maps. We actually devised this kind of iconic or the iconography to suggest a different kind of use. So here we have fire, not saying that you could have fire, but having quilts maybe, or just large open spaces. We had that for sound, we had that for all different, again, provoking people to start to think what we could do with all this vacant potential. The good thing about this very aesthetic, because you mentioned that the work I did with Stelton Limited, it was a very complex process and it was not understood. This project, however, was understood very well and made it to a lot of media and is in fact now part of a post-master, so you can actually go and study how to deal with vacancy, which is an interesting result, if you like, of a exhibition in terms of political resonance. Now, moving on towards an exhibition we made entitled Radical Locality, where we tried to see how architects are dealing with the current socio-economical reality. The exhibition actually encompasses what kind of collaborations are made, what kind of design outcome. Well, it's, to be honest, not so much design, but we'll get to that probably also in the discussion. What kind of practices, the overturn, and what that actually says about the profession. So these are people that collaborate with policymakers, activists, designers, environmentalists, researchers, a lot of people coming together around these vacant buildings or different topics that we can't address anymore on our own. So this whole idea of transdisciplinary discourse, which of course in theory has been with us for a long time, is now probably first of all brought into practice because of necessity, and on the other hand because of the technological infrastructure that allows us to communicate very fast. Well, again, maybe all very obvious, but this is a vacant building by reanimated by Zeus. It's one of the few rising stars in this generation, in fact. And the building is situated in the city center of Rotterdam. And they, in fact, proposed to the owner, who was going to have it it was going to be demolished to make it into a parking site. They offered him the amount that he would make with the parking site if they could own the building for 5 years. So here, just to make it very clear, they were squatting it and they became proactive and then offered him a business model. From that business model, they came up with this sort of programmatic intentional scheme. And from that scheme, they started actually really reanimating that whole area. This is how the building looks now. The roof is used for the duck ucker. How do you? They're very good in having these very strange names, but I will not translate it. It's just the urban gardening is used in the restaurant downstairs, so it's sort of trying to make a little loop in itself. There's a beer garden there, very un-Dutch Berlin atmosphere. And they're used, of course, they use crowdfunding because they wanted to open up a public corridor. For 25 euros, you'd have your name CNC milled into one of these beams. And in fact, they did it. It looks like this. They just broke through the... you see that the building is fully animated. There's you can rent office space. There's all different... It's all about program, but very innovative program. And this is their ambition. So they're just started. Again, the yellow is the bridge. So they really want to... So here's their building. They work through the central station, and they are here now. So, I mean, I'm just amazed, but they're really doing it. They organize, they just try to search for different ways of animating. Here they worked with a theater group. They made a play about the status of our democracy. It's in fact a circle that opens up during, the circle is closed when they begin, and it opens up during the performance. I have to speed up a little bit. This is a vacant lot. The architect analyzed what was around it and started to make an inventory. Well, of course, the kids are there first. They opened up the fence, and then the kids wanted a sports circle. The people wanted food. There was a cooking school here. There's a sports school there. They had yoga outside, all this very sort of feel-good. And it's still there, and it's actually being paid by the property owners of the property around it. So it's social housing, and it's interesting that they value this. get to that in the discussion probably. Now this is in the Bijlmer in Amsterdam. It's the famous, very large scale building. This was added in the 70s. It's called the Habuurt. The architect, Mr. Van Gool, aimed to make smaller scale buildings all the way up to the big honeycomb structures. And I called him to talk about this particular project, and he said, when they start painting your facade, you know that your building is in trouble. So bear that in mind. But the good thing about this project is not only that they try to animate it. This was known as the sewer of the Bijlmer. So people, these are the kind of people that are being gentrified and pumped around in cities. And they are trying to somehow break through this loop. So there's a lot of young women that got in labor early, that is in this, that live here, people that work in the airport and so on. And here they start to really work with the community to make this, to not tear it down, but really see how they can ameliorate their condition, both socially as spatially. I'm just running through some, this is another example, a former printing zone for newspapers. Well, of course, newspapers are, at least in the Netherlands, going down in print. And these two young architects actually just adopted this building and started organizing discussions on what they call failed architecture. And it's really become this very lively hub at the moment, where they not only, of course, address architecture, but really try to bring together a community. Another vacancy solution, these are the little canal houses. They've lost function. They were there for the bridge waiter to open and close the bridges, but this is all done mechanically, and the water tides are not in such a flux anymore. And they've now proposed that all these bridge houses would become hotel rooms, and it's a big success. This is a project by SuperU Studio in Enschede, in the south of east of the Netherlands, and what they were the first actually to start working with what I call these harvest charts, and it's a good example of how form can follow waste. They made an inventory, again, up till 15 kilometers, because after that you tap into the migration of the material, then it becomes not lucrative anymore to transport it. They made an analysis, and then they came up with this structure for a private client. In the end, the aim was 90%, they don't call it recycling, they call it upcycling, but it's 65 now. Good. Here's another project by a young architect who wants to open up these heritage sites. Different conversation, but again, an interesting way to deal with stories untold in the Netherlands. Looks like this. A lot of informal, temporary little things are happening. I curated also an exhibition called Architecture of Consequence to see where architecture could make a difference in terms of how we deal with food, energy, time, a lot of topics that are very high on the agenda. And I asked them to somehow come up with an event. And it was winter, and they came up with this beautiful bucky bar where we basically claimed public domain. So everybody got their own umbrella, and we came together and built this dome. The electricity was given by one of the neighbors, and another neighbor started to cook. It was just very heartwarming. In fact, the police closed it down at 2 o'clock, and then I knew I was betraying some of the law, but there were 12 rules that I neglected while programming this. But because it looked so aesthetically pleasing, the police thought it was all fine. Dus Architects, they have the ambition to 3D print a building, and they have a test site in the Amsterdam North. And it's going to look like this. I'm very intrigued by the fact that it's very, very nostalgic in terms of its typology, because if we can 3D print, why make a 17th century facade? But it's probably a provocation, because that's a point I want to make. Young Dutch architects are really understanding media, and here you see one of the three owners in the most popular talk show of the Netherlands, just to give you an idea that there's no money, but they're getting very, very smart and resilient in how to find attention and come up with new solutions. Another example is architects that they collectively started an energy company to gain critical mass and thereby start to produce, or at least have some kind of weight against all the corporations. Well, it's a bit off-center in terms of, but it's like the architecture of a collective infrastructure. Here's Stealth, a project I rather like, because it really has this democratic principle. They just give the material to a certain neighborhood, they help them analyze their problems, and then they start building it themselves. In this case, different ways of animating public domain. Old industrial zone, no longer in use. This project uses also only reused materials, but why I put this one in is that it works with people that are re-entering, people that have been in jail and that are re-entering society. So there's no, they're learning a craft which is at the same time empowering. The turn side is that it took twice as long to build it. So another big trend is, of course, reusing buildings that are already existing and then modernizing a little bit. This is ZEC from Utrecht. They basically just introduced a new facade, and the interior is then refurbished. A lot of that going on. This is a bit of the same story. You'll see, yeah, I don't know, it's a bit vague, but this is the existing structure, and then you just fold a roof over. A lot of this is going on in the Netherlands. Nothing really new, but then sort of enveloping. Or this is another project that is made by and for a local community, which had an architect among them, and they wanted some single ding. Ooh, well, we'll forget about it. It's a kiosk where people can come together, and it works very, very well. People have schedules. There's a lot of, again, collective organizing of this pavilion, but also the program they do together. And of course, we get these pretty lovely animating pictures. Another interesting example is that we start not going up, but going down. This is a building built in a hill, basically. Now, this is a project that doesn't really give itself away, because it's an architect that has become a developer. That's also a new tendency. So he has organized all his clients online, and they are really collaborating on making this happen without getting the middleman in. To give you an idea, 40% of the building sum usually goes to the project developer. So you can sort of cut that part out if you are smart in reaching out to your public. This is a project that came about solely with material from eBay. So people that had, again, a sort of waste follows form, or form follows waste. People just donated this material, and they made it into this tea pavilion in the north of Amsterdam. Looks like this from the side. Another very simple project, it's a do-it-yourself theater, so we're not only losing the architect, but we're also losing the actor. Because people came together and they just had their scores. It's a piece for four people, and everybody has their score, and they read it out loud, and together they make a theater piece. Yeah, I put these two in because it's the same office, and I found it interesting that there are offices out there. Powerhouse Company is one of them. They come from the OMA school. that in fact are really adapting in terms of from a design specific point, because we could see that a lot of the other projects are very social oriented and very temporal and very well, one could question if in fact these new structures of collaboration and this new way of financing, you know, is that the way forward for architecture? Question mark. I'm not propagating that. Let's see. And we brought this all together in a very, very light and rough manner, just like a collage, just a landscape, because I didn't mention that. The crisis is there. We haven't been building in terms of very big scale, but there's more and more architects entering the profession. I don't know. I don't know if there's something to do with the educational system, because we have 4,000 young architects still wanting to be an architect a year. That's probably something we'll be addressing in the discussion also. So this idea of reinventing yourself as a civic entrepreneur or a double agent or a strategic designer is things that I'm interested in at this moment. And also as a cultural institute, as I mentioned, we have to sort of reconfigure how to act. And in Maastricht, where we are based, oops, this is going by itself, it's a city organized around the ceramics industry, because of course we had the rough material there. It was the first city in the Netherlands. It's located in the south. I should have brought a picture I now think of, but this gives you an idea. This neighborhood, in fact, was going to be regenerated in 2004, but it just was too late for the whole, just to see it up front. This is where we are located now. This is all factory, and this part was already torn down. And this was the plan. It was too dense in the first place, but now when I came to Maastricht, it looked like this. So the factories were already gone, and because I entered the institute as a curator, and the then director had good bonds with the local municipality, and then we just came up with the idea, let's start showing by doing. So these 5 hectares, could we use it in a way to see if society is able to somehow animate itself? Because of course we also have to do with this shift in where citizens and governmental agency and the market parties are totally reconfigurating the role playing as such. And we got the key and we opened it up and it looked like this. And we just started in making an inventory who wanted to put in some effort. We had a help of an ecological landscape and we started just opening it up, cleaning it up with help of incredible amount of volunteers. We started fencing it off because some parts were polluted to the it was too problematic to have activity there. We had a young design office, Maurer United, help us with this little pavilion and build this atrium in it. And over the last 2 years, we've programmed 120 different events outside, varying from poetry nights to there was a biologist who just had a lamp and a white sheet, and he was telling us all about the insects. But we also collaborated with the local film house, where we had people vote which film they wanted to see, and you know, 600 people came up. Just Maastricht is only 120,000 people, so it's very small. It's a medieval city. We produced food. The architects from the Düsseldorf Schule made a small gallery that they built in. Again, already I mentioned this. One that I'm particularly proud of that we made help happen is the Sky Hive. It's a mobile Sky Hive that we actually had a course of 10 young imkers, people who take care of the bees. They got a course of half a year, how to tend bees in an inner city context. And this pole would then go up and down. Here you are, see them at work. And this resulted in our own honey, which is, of course, thrilling. And one of the Again, we just have a very open but responsible attitude, moving outside of the institute and trying to see where we can make a difference. This was an initiative by two young Maastricht-based men who said, "We want to program, and we call it Picnic Electronique." And they, in fact, had a success with 2,500 people coming to just be together, sit in public space, drink some wine, and let's see. I think I have one more. Ah, this is also what happens if you program outside. Again, I come from. This is the little lovely pavilion I showed you. Why I show it is that, again, if you, as a cultural producer, you're used to your safe haven, if you like, your castle of controllable damage. In this case, of course, things go way over your head. I think I touched upon the most things I wanted to say, but maybe to stress, this generation is not only for looking for opportunities, they create them. And they were very well networked. They have some kind of pragmatic ideology, a critical opportunism, if you like it, a technocratic positivism also. And I'm absolutely puzzled, in fact, what this says about our discipline, because I think the boundaries are limitless at the moment. At least this young generation is somehow grasping anything they can to organize themselves or to at least be busy and do something. But professionally, of course, we could wonder what is then the architecture if it is dematerializing. Is it dematerializing so that these architects can somehow infiltrate in systems to alternate change? I do not know. It's too early to say. But what we can say is that they are trying to understand the systems at the beginning of this 21st century and trying to infiltrate it in a different manner. I'm personally rather challenged by the current condition in terms of, I find it really enchanting but also very, very vulnerable, because, of course, and I'm forgetting a very important point, we as a cultural institute decided to start a school, because where's the power to generate change? It's still with the local municipality, and here we collaborated with the local developer, with the local municipality, us as a cultural partition, and two architects. We are working on trying to understand which attitude we need to work in a city that is locked up, that is in a one way finished but not adapting. And we started last week with our first school day to somehow come up with new methods on how to address the topics that we are touching upon. Again, it's the answers are not yet there. We see some hints maybe in the projects. But I find this a nice and proper image to show as a last image. It's the building by OMA. This is built in a city with a vacancy rate of 31%. It's built for and with the local municipality, leaving behind 12 buildings in the periphery of the city. It actually does pose this very serious responsibility of the architect, as far as I'm concerned. And of course, yes, I'm also a groupie and a fan and amazed. But it's something we can talk about maybe later. I'll keep it at that. It's a very brief and maybe eclectic, kaleidoscopic introduction to some of the tendencies. Thank you. And Piotr, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you, Saskia, for this presentation and for keeping our time discipline as well. I think we will return for the several topics, because strikes me, of course, is from one hand that the problems you pointed out are very common also for the younger generation of Polish architects. The things like going to the public, the attempt to make at least something, which is physical, which is realized. From another hand, this topic of the applied interdisciplinarity, which I think this was very important to me, that what you mentioned, that we are talking from the really long time about interdisciplinarity, but in fact only in the last 10 years we can observe that this methodology or the approach to the work is going to the real, because for instance of the networking, so that many people can work together at the same time. And of course other things like the point that this let's say broad cut of the activities is not concerning only the single architects and the younger generation of architects, but also is something like mode which is spreading between the culture institutions. If you see for the event we are participating right now, this is the is called the Urban Design Festival. But in fact, from three editions, it's turning really to the direction of the educative and popularizing events. So it's going more into the general public. At this point, I think also the big institutions like Museum of Modern Art or Institute are slowly following or indicating this this direction. So it's hard to say what is the point of many people, that the answer and the new agenda of the younger generation of architects is only answer to the crisis, which is very often like repeated. So my idea is maybe we can make the like a first round of questions right now to not lose a point, let's say, after your presentation, and then our presentation, which was intended more like insight into the idea of using the maps, using the websites as a tool, will be maybe the end. We can treat it as a reopen presentation, so please just give me know if this will be too much after. Yes. So we're opening the questions if you have such.
As I understand, this process is going on like a few years already, like 10 years, let's call it. And I would like to know if you can see the differences in between the, I don't know, in energy or attitudes of the architects who are using these new tools, or it's something that is already like going into the past. Because this is, for example, from our point of view as architects who's sometimes using this kind of soft interventions, we're thinking that it's more, I mean, maybe not over, but it's not so powerful anymore.
There we are. I think it's, you're right that there's was two ways of answering. First of all, there's the, of course, the very the notion of the decentralization. So the government is pulling back. This gives new rise to the local and regional governments. They are trying to understand what their new challenges are, and you see that they are willing to actually adopt, if you like, the 2.0 version of these kind of strategies. So on the one hand, they really start to program with the energy of a particular community, themselves. On the other hand, I think that we're moving towards a more refined way of combining these maps, the tools, the notion of the role of the architect. People are also withdrawing as a way of resisting this lack of... I mean, is the architect a social worker? Right? I mean, if I put it very bluntly, this awareness is now... so it arose from and maybe I'm sure you all, if you're all architects, you know that this super Dutch generation in the Netherlands had a very heavy weight. Huh? They were building all over the world. So of course they set the tone and they set the legacy for this generation, and they wanted to do something. So they just went out there and started. But again, we see that they are more and more withdrawing, at the other time getting smarter in how they implement their projects in order to build. So if that's looking at different kind of way of production, a very old classical but you're right, I think it's a momentum. And in fact also the civilians, the citizens, are taking more responsibility at the moment. And sometimes they use an architect, but it's, you know, he's like one of 30. Is it the English? Or is all very clear?
Michał Szata.
On one hand, you were saying that what I gather is that you're in a way criticizing the neoliberal model, right? I think you are opposed to it. Am I right? Just to kind of see if
I think some mistakes were made.
So if so, and you were saying that right now there is this change that shifts responsibility from the welfare state to local governments, to local entities. Do you think that's a good thing, in a way? Because on one hand, you know, I gather that you're opposed to the entire process. On the other hand, there are some good things coming out of this.
The answer is yes. Yes, but I find it very problematic. I mean, I'm not a politician, but I could think about smarter ways into the notion of decentralization, right? Solely. And then they only focus now on the water, on the infrastructure, the basics, exactly. And then the infrastructure of the internet, so the cyber cables. The good thing is that local municipalities, if there is good leadership, they have very strong feeling with what is the matter, and they can really make a difference. In the south of the Netherlands, we have some very strong politicians that really understand what's at stake. Now, how all these fragments will be coordinated and brought back together is one concern, and another concern is that there's a lot of double in knowledge production, or knowledge get lost also. And we talked about it earlier, that if the architect... We see it in a vast terrain, that knowledge in terms of if it's craft or it's getting lost. And if everything's decentralized, how will we again make sure that we do not do things double and somehow still understand each other as a whole? And not even, I mean, how can we then move beyond the idea of the nation state? No, sure, I can yeah.
Okay, so my question... So my question is, do you find any solution for make it less local? Because the problem of less population is not only the less population, it's also the different density of cities.
Absolutely,
the vacancies which are produced is not only the effect of the less population, but also of the...
Yeah, that's a part of my concern at this moment, and maybe the Netherlands was over-regulated. Huh? I mean, a little bit of letting go is not so much of a problem. But at this point, it is a concern how to actually basically finance the system we're in. And the system is addicted to growth, which is a problem, because we have to really change mentally. Also, the way local governments make money is by this idea of giving the ground out and then having something built on it. We won't even go towards speculation, which a lot of local municipalities went into at the end of the 90s because they thought, these developers do it, I can do it. This is all very dubious, but this system of how we pay for our cities, I didn't even mention, that's the last image I showed. Why I'm also opposed is that we had 33 bus lines, which is being reduced to 16. So we have this beautiful building with nobody to go in it, and on the other hand, we're cutting back, you know, like bare necessities for public to function. These are huge questions. Now, in answering your initial question, I feel that there's generic lessons to be learned, but every project is so specific that friends of mine are actually building a website now, which is called the Self-Building Building, where they organized all these force fields, being the political, the financial, the materialization, the social aspects. And they are looking at, well, nearly if you press here, what happens there? So again, there's a manual, but it's a manual that has to be rewritten for every particular context, unfortunately. But this is also, in answering your question, I feel that these initial grassroots initiatives, everybody was really happy about it, but now the general discourse is like, okay, but only bottom up, you know, it's charming, but we need the how can the two come together, the top down and the bottom up.
It's somehow connected as well to the question how to make the schools about architecture nowadays, because we as a tutor sometimes on the student workshops, we just like sharing the experiences from this kind of actions, and the students are really interested and they're learning how to make the, let's say, decoy projects or provocation and so on. But at the end I have the reflection that it's really wrong, because they cannot they cannot follow our path, because those tools are already like overdated mostly.
Yeah.
And this is the question, how to learn about architecture. And of course the question is, what's that?
Exactly, yeah. Well, it depends on, of course, where you want to position within the field. But you're totally right that the tools, and even I would dare say that the language is outdated. But how to formulate that? It's a very fragmented landscape. Sorry.
I have a question.
Yes, I am listening.
Describing one of the installations you were talking about, you said that it was so aesthetically pleasing that police wasn't very... very, very harsh with you. So my question is about the aesthetics, and what is the position, what is the status of aesthetics in a debate among architects right now in Holland? And is it, you know, what kind of tool is the aesthetic now? Is it getting a subversive, or it's overused to...
Well, aesthetics you could talk about, but beauty was a word you couldn't use for the last 10 years. And it's since 2 years that we see that it's re-entering the realm again. In this specific case, why I mentioned it is that I made the Venice Biennial in 2008 and 2010. And conceptually, the project in 2008 was a process, because I wanted to illustrate this, that we're shifting from thinking in terms of an object towards a process. By designing a process and anticipating on all the cultural jet set flying into Venice, and if we could somehow use the knowledge gathered to formulate new ways out of the situation we're in, then making an exhibition with the material that we gathered, and it was very much about the moment of conception, production, reproduction, display, it's a bit, maybe it goes too far, but trying to understand the profession as a process, and it resulted in a very dense, chaotic structure, which then became an exhibition. The 2 years after, we made this, because it was a group of people that made it, as already mentioned. I totally came back to the aesthetics personally, because it was a way in. And this way in is obviously the most important, because you need to be on the table to have a conversation. And I think at this point we see a appreciation also by the for the aesthetics as a motivator, as a catalyst for discussion, but also this aspect of architecture being able to imagine the imaginary. This is something that I find, at least in my context, is being reappreciated. So speculative scenarios or critical fiction or all these ways that we can imagine alternatives. Basically the shift from this real towards a more fictional has entered over the last 3 years. And it makes sense in a way. I was actually wondering, maybe if I... Oh, sorry, there's a question. Can I pose one question in the meantime to you guys? Because what we see in the Netherlands at the moment is, again, this sort of the dance between government, private parties, and the civilians. So there's this triangle dance that is really shifting in terms of who's responsible for what. And it's even becoming like the narrative of the politicians, that they call it the due democracy. So you have to participate or you're a failure. I don't know, I'm just wondering if this is something that you recognize, or, I mean, are people animated or, because there's a lot of fake narrative going around in this terms of say that you want to emancipate people, and at the same time it's just another way of instrumentalizing force field.
I think in the Polish context, and generally in the Central Europe, this process is not that advanced. This is connected to the fact that the transformation and the whole logic of the transformation on the cross of these centuries was delaying these processes, which are in the countries like Holland never interrupted. And if you see the wealth states like Switzerland and Norway, where the political debate and the tension between all these the angles of the triangle are not that visible, just because of the situation, then we can see that, for instance, the new agendas or the activism in the circuits of the Dutch, not Dutch but Swiss or Nordish architecture, it's nothing really important. It doesn't exist almost. So I have a feeling that this is strongly connected to also to the politicization of the urban and public realm. On that way, of course, we are becoming to the state of development which was in Germany or in Holland maybe 5 years ago. But we have like the different settings. For instance, there is a lot of conversation right now about all these people who are getting grants, so the NGO level, for instance, the Polish architects since last years have not access for the instruments of the public financing and to the grants as individuals, as companies. So on that way, I think that problem is not that present in our circle. But at the same time, of course, some of the actors of this play are very active. For instance, there are companies who are just working with the like making the projects or preparing the competition briefs, and they are very specialized in this. So I don't know if this is more or less.
Yeah, I had a question. I mean, I'm not sure if I'll be able to talk about that, because I've been working in the Netherlands a few years ago, and I remember some, construction policies that were going on in the country, and I don't know if they're still going on, but I remember, because you often said about, you talk about this crisis and how the market has changed, and the architects, they have to reinvent themselves and do something according to, but I remember that actually the Netherlands was managing the soil quite well in terms of efficiency on not wasting soil. So perhaps they correct. I mean, this is up to you. Maybe you can expand about how it happened to have vacancies in the Netherlands. Because as far as I remember, the buildings, when they are not in use, they're getting quickly demolished and quickly rebuilt in the Netherlands. I mean, so is this mechanism being blocked by the lack of, credit given by the banks? I mean, can you expand a little bit on how the crisis actually influenced, like physically, this change? Because for me, it's not that clear, because as far as I know, for the Dutch architects within their country, there always been work because of this refreshing of the fabric, let's say.
I already touched upon it in the first of all, it's not a policy that you have to break down a building or demolish a building before you build a new one. So then it comes up to the economical model again of land distribution, and for a long time, again, everything was growing, but the shift of, let's say, what society asks from a spatial configuration and what we were producing, namely office spaces, mainly, and it's just what you said, the basic rules of economy, it's just not connecting. And at this point, a lot of the bigger firms are going towards the new economies, of course, and building large icons over there. By the way, it's important to say that 90% of the Netherlands is not even touched by an architect. It's just engineers and project developers that build it. So when we talk about Dutch architecture, it's obviously a very small field. But in terms of the soil, I think there's always been, I'm not so sure if I really understand the question in terms of the soil, but there's been a very common sense, if you like, in how to deal with materials, with your concept, and so on and so forth. But I feel that the market mechanism of making money, basically, it's not even about architecture per se. The machine didn't come to a halt on time. And this bubble, we have to deflate, I think, over the next 20 years. And then start to reevaluate. I mean, just to our ground prices are at some point three times higher than in Belgium and in Germany. I mean, where did that come about?